a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
The South Dakota Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. The first thing I'm going to do is request that you all check your cell phones and make sure they're either off or silence, out of respect to those that are going to be testifying and to the members up here. I've seen where people are testifying and a phone goes off and they lose their train of thought, which is real easy to do when you are up here testifying. With that, I'll have the secretary please call the roll.
Senators Kamak?
Here.
Hunhoff?
Here.
Otten?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Solano?
Here.
Monroe?
Here.
Valley?
Here.
There is a quorum.
We have a quorum. I want to welcome you all here this morning, and also to those folks that are listening to us on the internet. We are probably going to take the bills in the order that they are in this morning. The minutes have been provided in your books. The chair would entertain a motion on those minutes. Moved by Senator Kamak, seconded by Senator Otten. Those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved as written. We have a couple pages this morning, and I'm going to have you introduce yourself. Tell us what you're going to do with the rest of your life, and then tell us what you like to do in your spare time. Whoa.
I'm Jason. I'm going to NDSU for animal science, and I like to read.
You like to read, okay.
Let's sit down, maybe.
All right. I'm Marie Zander. I want to go to SDSU to major in biology with emphasis on pre-med in hopes of being an ER doctor. I like to sleep a lot. So,
so you're my girl.
All right. The pages are a vital function to us up here, and it's a great experience for them. And so I'm just going to put a plug in to you folks and those that are listening that if you have a child in school that's a junior or senior going to be next year, get them interested in the page program. It's really a learning experience, and those people make friends that they never forget over the years. So, and I'm just going to tell the pages, if you, if anyone does have something they do want to hand out, please give it to the pages. They'll disseminate it to the members and do that behind the desk up here. With that, just going to remind everyone that is going to testify this morning to please sign in at the podium so that the secretary has your name and has it spelled correctly and who you represent. And with that, does anyone here on the committee have anything before we get into our bills this morning? Seeing none, we will at this point take the bills in the order in which they appear on the calendar. We have Senate Bill 81st, and that is to increase the selling price of a towed vehicle that exempts the seller of the vehicle from certain vehicle dealer licensing requirements. So with that, we would take proponents of Senate Bill 80. Senator Ewing, please introduce yourself and proceed. Former vice chairman of this committee.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and good senators of the Transportation Committee. It feels a little odd sitting on this side of the fence in this room. With that said, I do have a very simple bill for you.
Introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm Senator Bob Ewing from District 31, Lawrence County. Senate Bill 80, the title is an act to increase the selling price of a towed vehicle that exempts the seller of the vehicle from certain vehicle dealer licensing requirements. This is a constituent-driven bill, as well as I myself used to be in the towing industry, and this is something that I wanted to work on and correct back in the day, but I kind of felt it was a conflict, so I waited. It deals with, on page 2 of the bill, line 22, chapter 12, any towing agency that acquires and sells a vehicle which has been towed at the request of a private landowner under the provision of Chapter 32-36 or at the request of a law enforcement officer if no vehicle is sold for an amount over $200. The change that we want to make is raise the $200 to $1,200. And I'll just give you a little history. The simplicity of it is if you see a vehicle sitting along the highway with the orange tag on the window, it's been checked by law enforcement. Someone has left it there. And if it remains there for a day or two, chances are the local tow company will end up with that vehicle. And none of the towing companies like to get these abandoned vehicles because you tow them, you store them, and you have to go through the process of getting rid of them. Most of them are vehicles that are going to require a lot of repair to make them usable again. So they usually end up in the salvage yards and they're crushed and turned into tuna cans. Many years ago, the price of iron and metals was anywhere down there around $30 to $70. Today, last time I checked, you could get $120 a ton. So the best outlet to get rid of these abandoned vehicles is to take it and have it crushed. And your older, heavier vehicles are naturally going to weigh a couple ton or better, and you're going to exceed that price. This exemption in law, if you're going to receive more than $200, you're going against the law. So the correction to that is the towing agency has to have a used vehicle dealership license, of which I had to get back in the day. And a good share of the smaller towing companies do not want to be in the used vehicle dealership business. So this is going to allow these folks to get rid of these vehicles through the salvage program and realize more than $200. And I've been asked, why $1,200? Well, we just kind of picked that figure so that we wouldn't have to be back before a committee or further legislation, if this passes, asking for a raise. Metal prices go up and down all the time. The $200 has been in place since 1989. Senate Bill 253 was the bill that added the towing section. The only thing this affects is that particular paragraph in law. I guess with that, I will stand by for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Senator. I think we'll take further proponents of this bill at this point. Further proponents? Any proponents? Or any proponents? Last call for proponents. I think at this point we'll just see. Are there any opponents? Any opponents? Last call for opponents. All right, we'll open it up for questions. You're not going to get by that easy, Senators.
It was a sloppy presentation, so I expected questions.
All right. Senator Monroe.
Thank you. Senator Ewing.
Mr. Chair.
I don't understand why, when we put a certain amount in a statute, then inflation eats it up. Got to go back, visit it again. I'm just curious, why wasn't a bill written to say if they get $500 worth of steel out of it, they could get $500. If they get $3,500 worth of steel out of it from the salvage company, they can pay them $30. Why? I mean, I think that they should be able to just say for the amount that they would receive for the price of the metal from the entity accepting the vehicle. Can you comment on that?
Go ahead, Ms. Center.
I guess we didn't really look at going down that part of the road. We just tried to increase the price to compensate so that hopefully we would be safe for a while in the industry. And there, I should have also mentioned that we're going to get together with the Department of Motor Vehicles next summer and try to do some further improvements on the towing in the state as far as is different laws, and to try to clear a few things up. There's some gray areas out there as to what the towing companies have to abide by.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Hahnhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Ewing, they would not be able to resell the car as a actual operational vehicle, I assume, without getting the used car dealer's license. Is that right? They could only sell this for salvage.
Senator?
You know, they probably could, but as I said, most of these vehicles are not worth fixing. But if one did, you still have to go through the abandoned vehicle title procedure and acquire the title into the towing company's name, and then the next step to do that, to sell to someone. I guess I should say, back in the day when I had my company, once in a great while you might end up with something that would be a good school car for a student right in town, a vehicle that just stayed in town, and a person would go down that path. But none of these towing companies, as I said, want to be in this business. And most of the time, if an individual that is in the used car dealership business gets one of these vehicles, they get busy to get rid of it. They don't want it sitting on their lot either. These are basically the 99% of these vehicles are unwanted items that, unfortunately, there should be laws in this state that it's littering if you leave one along the road. Because when we'd come up on one, if the license plates were gone and the stereo were gone, we owned it.
Other questions? Senator, I'm not sure that I understand how this works in reality. And if you'll just step me through this and see where I've gone wrong here in my story. But you get a call from an officer, you go out, and the car has been left there for several days. And so you tow it into your facility. And then if you want to dispose of the car, the most you can get for it is $200. Is that what this says? And now that raises it to $1,200. Or how do you get this abandoned title? How does that work? I mean, can you just go out and start picking up cars? And maybe the towing business would be a good business. Just start going out and pick up cars. Could you explain that, how that works for us, Senator?
The $200 is the maximum you can receive for a vehicle unless you have the used vehicle dealer license. And most towing agencies in their community, they serve law enforcement. And you don't always get you have to take the bad with the good, and abandoned vehicles is that aspect of it. As I said, these companies don't want these because you have to tow them, store them, and dispose of them. The process to legally dispose of one is you write a letter to the last known registered owner, as well as the DVM, and you wait 30 days. And then you go through the, if those come back on, if the one comes back from the last owner unopened, then you have the ability to go to your county treasurer, and they will issue you a title for the vehicle. So it takes 30 to 45 days for that process, and in the meantime, it's taking up space in your yard. And I think at one time we had over 100 of them in our yard before I realized that it wasn't a real good business to be in.
If I may, so at that point when you have the title now, and you can sell that vehicle, but for no more than $200, is that what the rub is?
Correct. Yep.
And if I do sell it to my friend over here for $200, because that's the most I can get, he can go out and sell it for $2,000 if he can get that out of it, and he's the one that makes the money, not you. Is that correct?
Other than when you receive that title, it is an abandoned or salvage type of title. So you're not going to realize a lot of money with it. Even if you take the time to put a tremendous amount of money into it and fix it up, it still has that disclosure on the title that follows it.
Follows it all the time whenever you go to sell that vehicle.
That's correct.
Going to have a damaged disclosure or abandoned title to it. Okay. Thank you for that explanation. Further questions? Seeing none, we'll close to public testimony and open it up for discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
I think Solano was first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move do pass.
Second. Second by Senator Kamak. Any discussion on that motion? Senator Solano.
Just simply, I think when you take into consideration the cost of towing now along with storage and all of that, clearly what's in existing statute is not adequate, and I think this is a reasonable move. Thank you.
Further discussion on that motion? Seeing none, we will go to a vote, and the secretary will call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay.
Senators Kamak?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Auten?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Solano?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Senate Bill 85 has received a majority vote of the Transportation Committee. Senator Monroe.
I move that Senate Bill 80 be placed on the consent calendar.
No.
85. What? No. I knew it was 80.
Senate Bill 80 has received a majority vote of the members of the Transportation Committee and will go to the floor on the debate calendar. Okay, that takes us up to Senate Bill 85. Senate Bill 85 is an act to repeal certain requirements regarding the handlebar height on motorcycles. Senator Haverly, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Terry Haverly, State Senator from District 35, Rapid City. Today I'm bringing you Senate Bill 85, which is an act to repeal certain requirements regarding handlebar heights on motorcycles, specifically that the handlebar grips cannot be at or above shoulder height when sitting on the seat. The current law was brought to me to my attention by a constituent. And when he called me and asked me to look into it, I said, well, I'm a freshman legislator, but I'm not naive enough to sign on to a bill without doing research. So I did. Senate Bill 85 is just about cleaning up a law that's no longer of value, and the facts support it. There's no national standard and no commonly agreed upon standard between the states. Minnesota, for example, has no restrictions on handlebar heights. You can be riding on Interstate 90 in Minnesota, cross over into our state, and you're in violation. Basically, nationally, the trend is toward repealing this restriction. There are no scientific studies that shows handlebar heights have a negative impact on safety. Before deciding to work on this bill, I did research. I wanted stats, not anecdotes. I contacted the South Dakota Department of Public Safety for any statistics that they had indicating this caused safety concerns. They had none. I contacted local businesses in the motorcycle industry to verify if they had concerns or comments. I was told the handling characteristics of a motorcycle are determined by frame, fork, and geometry of the wheel. This means nothing to me, but basically the height of the handlebars is purely a matter of personal preference and comfort, much like the tilt steering wheel feature in automobiles. And finally, I contacted longtime riders who told me they prefer their handlebars at different heights as they feel better circulation when they're on long rides and better reaction time. Also, maneuverability can be enhanced in tight situations with those with long torsos and long arms. So basically, there are some issues where bikers feel it's safer to have higher handlebars, and there are no stats to contradict this. Since there's no real safety data, does it make sense for South Dakota to have this restriction? In South Dakota, we love our freedoms. Let's support this freedom to ride. Our visitor industry continues to shine, and this August, we will welcome probably 1 million bikers into our state to enjoy our hospitality and the 75th anniversary of the Sturgis Bike Rally. This is the time. This is the year to repeal. I thank you for your consideration of Senate Bill 85. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Further proponents of Senate Bill 85.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Dan Kaiser, District 3 State Representative. And I don't know how to follow that. That was the most articulate, well-thought-out testimony I think I've ever heard in a committee. She covered the safety issues and the lack of any safety issues with this. Mainly, I wanted to point out that when any member here buys a new car, now their seat, their pedals adjust to their comfort, their seat adjusts to their comfort, the steering wheel tilts up and down and even comes in and out. And with a motorcycle, you don't get that. You've got to, as the individual who's got a vested interest in not only your own safety while riding this, but not only deal with your safety, but you're on a $20,000 machine sometimes more. There's a lot of safety considerations you're personally taking into account when you're riding this vehicle. You're going to set up this vehicle safely for yourself as well as others and in a manner that is comfortable for you to ride. I think the senator who commented before me made a lot of good points about the other states that don't have this restriction. And I just think this is a good bill. I like the philosophy of freedom behind it, and I would encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further proponents of Senate Bill 85. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. I'm Diana Miller, and I'm the registered lobbyist for ABATE. And if anyone wants to ask me what ABATE stands for, I'll answer that right away. It's a Brotherhood of Awareness, Training, and Education. I knew I'd get that question. I was hoping you'd ask me what my plans are for the future, as you did the pages and what I enjoy doing. And but I see that I must be past that particular age group. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think the previous two speakers, both Senator Haverly and Representative Kaiser, have done an excellent job. And I have people here today that are actual riders and want to speak to this particular issue. I consider, over the years, we've looked at a lot of red tape legislation, and if it's not used, we like to clear the books of legislation. And this, to me, is one of those red tape pieces of legislation to repeal the handlebar requirement height, because very few tickets, if any, have been issued. There is no standard across the country. In fact, 13 states have absolutely no restrictions. And as you heard with the addition of their testimony, we really did seriously look at credible data and statistics to try to find if there was any negative impact on safety, and we could not find it. Because obviously motorcycles today are far different from when this particular piece of legislation came in. It came in the late 60s, early 70s, and some of you that may or may not be of that era remember where the Easy Rider whole description of a biker came about. I can tell you today the whole atmosphere around motorcycles and the bikers have aged just a little bit, and we really emphasize safety, and we really feel that we would not do anything to jeopardize particularly their own lives and a bike that you pay extensive amount of money for. The handlebar height is really a matter of personal comfort and style, depending on the bike you're riding. You'll see some of the sports bikes that have very low handlebars. And so there's a difference there also that the young people are riding. But I would ask that you respectfully pass Senate Bill 85, and I'd like you to hear from actual riders up here in the Senate Transportation Committee. So thank you, Senator Valley and members of the committee, and I'll stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents of Senate Bill 85. Further proponents of Senate Bill 85. All right. If you are going to testify, you may want to move up so that we just kind of keep people coming to the witness table. All right. Please proceed. Identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Brandon Butler. I ride with high handlebars. I enjoy them. I first got them because of the way they looked. I didn't know how much more comfortable they were going to be for me. Went to high handlebars. My shoulders quit hurting. I used to drive with drag bars, which is the straight low ones like this. Didn't know that it was going to make me feel a lot more comfortable riding right here. I am borderline legal with the law right now. I'd prefer not to be illegal. I've also noticed with, like, my mirrors, it raises my mirrors up higher. I can see a lot better. If I got luggage packed on behind me, if I have my wife on the back seat, I got to see all around that. Just feel a lot more comfortable with them.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further proponents of Senate Bill 85. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Larry Nielsen. I am representing myself. I have ridden motorcycles for 35 years. I started teaching the motorcycle safety course in 2007, but having said that, I must emphasize that my testimony I present is my own personal opinions, not those of the safety program, although I may reference the curriculum. I hope to explain to you why a handlebar height, high or low, is not on a street bike is not as much of a safety concern as those who do not ride motorcycles may think. The motorcycle safety course explains that there are actually three ways to cause your bike to change direction. At low speeds, it's like a car. You rotate the handlebars and you go that direction. If you need to turn exceptionally tightly, like in a lane, you cause a bike to lean and rotate the handlebars in the direction of travel. This is the famous box exercise that anybody who's familiar with the motorcycle safety course loves to hate. However, and what is relevant to my presentation, at speed, which is probably as low as 10 miles an hour, the laws of physics of being attached to two flywheels takes over and you actually lean into the turn, using centripetal force to change direction. Rotating the steering is no longer the primary reason you turn. I presume everyone in this room has ridden a bicycle or knows somebody who has. Have you ever ridden that bicycle even for a split second with no hands? How come the rider does not fall down immediately when they let go of the handlebars? It's balance, but said balance is aided by physics. Does the bicycle get easier to ride the faster you go? Yes. Why? Again, the wheels plus the drivetrain on a motorcycle are flywheels. A spinning flywheel creates its own inertial force that wants to keep going in the same direction. It will maintain its position, even defying gravity. How do you change that? Centripetal force is the explanation. Changing direction on a motorcycle at speed is a result of applying centripetal force to the flywheels. It's not necessarily by steering. To turn at speed, you do not rotate the handlebars in the direction you're traveling. You cause the bike to lean, causing a centripetal force. I learned to turn instinctively, like water skiing, by shifting my weight in the seat, or if I was on the dirt bike, you step on the inside peg and the bike goes that direction. Without realizing I was not steering the bike until I began teaching the course and actually analyzed the procedure. The safety course includes an exercise to make you aware of this skill. To complete the exercise, say to turn left, you demonstrate that to turn properly, you actually push the inside grip down or forward. That turns your front wheel actually to the right to make you turn left. Handlebars help you control this process and speeds the entry into the corner. Remember your bicycle, riding with no hands. Of course, I'm not advocating riding with no hands because that is illegal, and there are many controls in the handlebars that are installed there for operation of the bike. But it is possible, even easy, to ride a bike at speed, with no hands if you would choose to. Therefore, I submit to the committee that the shape or height of the bars doesn't really affect the safety of the machine at speed, where the greatest risk of injury is. If, just like you adjust your seat and tilt wheel in your car, you can also adjust the motorcycle with the handlebars to your own personal comfort zone. Thank you, and I remain available for questions.
Thank you. Further proponents of Senate Bill 85. Like I said, if you're going to testify, move up towards the front here. Good morning. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
My name is Joe Kelly. I'm from Pierre. And I've ridden for a lot of years. My latest bike has high handlebars. But when I bought it and started, it had stock handlebars. And after years of construction work, my wrists have taken a beating. With stock handlebars, my hands went numb. a lot. So I bought taller ones. Long story short, I went 4 different sets of handlebar heights to where I am at now, and that's the most comfortable I've been on the bike since I've owned it. And I would like to see, because I'm right at that legal or illegal limit, but that's where I can ride the best and most comfortably. I mean, you can adjust everything else on a bike, from your foot pegs to stretch your legs out, or a different seat to move how you sit or how high you sit. I don't see why a higher handlebar or handlebar height should be any different.
Thank you. Thank you. Further proponents of Senate Bill 85. Further proponents of Senate Bill 85. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Chris Hessel, and I'm here representing myself today, which is a change. I don't have anything really to add that would change anything that's been said, but I just want to show my support, and I think this is a law that needs to be passed, and we'd appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents of Senate Bill 85. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, committee. My name is Jigs Cressy. I'm here representing myself. I'm also the state coordinator for Abate of South Dakota, and Diana talked about it a little earlier. Most of the testimony you heard today is about comfort. And I heard a quote from a longtime friend of mine that a comfortable rider is an in-control rider. So that's the major part about the comfort part of it. Diana and Senator Haverly talked about the standards. There are currently no national standards. Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standard 123 excuse me, sets the criteria for standardized placement of controls and footrests, but makes absolutely no mention of all the on suggested handlebar heights. The history that behind this is Abate. The members wanted to get a bill to repeal this. So we started doing our search, and we found no data to support that there was anything with it. So we had meetings with the Department of Public Safety and Highway Patrol. They also looked and could find no data. We did find one study. It was conducted by the Highway Safety Research Institute by the University of Michigan, and it was conducted in 1973. And it was done on handlebar heights of bicycles. Now, as you heard in testimony already before, the handling characteristics between bicycles and motorcycles are very similar. In that study, they conducted 10 individual tests on the handling, and of the 10, the high handlebars performed equally well or better in 7 of them, and better in 3 of the handling things. The 3 that it handled better were a circle test, a figure 8 test, and a slalom at speed. So as you can see, there are studies that prove that it is not a safety factor and that it actually performs better. So I would support ask the committee to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents of Senate Bill 85. Further proponents. Last call for proponents of Senate Bill 85. Last call for proponents. Opponents of Senate Bill 85. Opponents of Senate Bill 85. Last call for opponents. All right, we'll open it up to questions by members of the committee. Any questions by the committee? Seeing no questions, we'll move to discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ott.
Move do pass on
85. Okay, I've been moved do pass by Senator Otten, seconded by Senator Peterson. Comments on that motion, Senator Otten?
I don't really want to admit this, but I come back from an era of easy rider, so it shouldn't have been done when it was done, and I think this is just straightforward, and it's just time.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to compliment Senator Haverly. That was an excellent job that you did.
I was awake all night.
Further comments? Senator Kamak.
Just a quick comment. I also did a little research. I called some of the local law enforcement to see if there is any safety concerns, and I found none. I called and talked to some of the folks that I knew that rode bikes, and I found no concerns there. Personally, I come out, when I first saw it, I was thinking that was a bad idea, but I'm finding no opposition to it. So we've invited a million of our best biker buddies to show up in Sturgis this summer, and so I think it's a good bill.
Senator Solano.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I entered into looking at this bill with a lot of skepticism. Just in what my mind would think, you know, how can that be any safer? I was anticipating that this would be much less safe having the high handlebars. But I withheld judgment to the point of saying, you know, what does the data show? So we're making decisions based on data versus what my emotion would be or what other emotions would be. And I think that the group did an excellent job, you know, coming forward and presenting their case and providing data where there was data. And I just to make a quick comment, I think that this group did it right. And I appreciate the way you went about from a grassroots level of talking to legislators and educating legislators, and I appreciate the time and effort that was put into this. Thank you.
Further comments? Senate Bill 85. Seeing no further discussion, we will move to the vote on Senate Bill 85. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Kamak?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Solano?
Aye.
Monroe? Excused. Valley?
Aye.
Six ayes.
Senate Bill 85 has received a majority vote of the members. And it will go to the floor on the debate calendar. Just as an aside, I know Senator Monroe wanted to vote on this, but he had to be taken away, and he would have been with the majority here. So I was going to ask Diana Miller how she has her handlebars set on her bike, on her motorbike, but I thought better of it. All right. We'll now move to the third bill on our calendar, Senate Bill 94. This is a bill to establish a license fee for electric-powered motorcycles. So, proponents of Senate Bill 94, and we have Senator Haverly. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Senator Terry Haverly from Rapid City, District 35. Oddly, I have two bills that I'm sponsoring in session, and they both are related to motorcycles. So, I've done a lot of research this year on that. I am pleased to bring Senate Bill 94 for your consideration today, which is to establish a license fee for electric-powered motorcycles. Oddly, the current law in South Dakota provides for licensing of motorcycles based on the engine size in cubic centimeters, or that equivalent in cubic inches. The ranges of fees result in smaller motorcycles paying a smaller fee, with larger motorcycles paying a higher fee. Now, manufacturers are building motorcycles that are electric and are powered by a battery. So what we are trying to accomplish with Senate Bill 94 is simply to create a provision for the licensing of electric-powered motorcycles. I'm going to ask Myron Rao from the South Dakota Automobile Dealers Association to come forward and to further explain the importance piece of this legislation. But I would appreciate your favorable vote, and I will stand by for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Further proponents of Senate Bill 94. Further proponents. Mr. Rao, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Myron Rao, President and Registered Lobbyist for the South Dakota Auto Dealers Association. And something Senator Otten said a little bit ago about how many years in the Easy Rider era. And then I heard Larry Nielsen talking about the number of years. I've ridden for 50 years. That's scary. Anyway, that's off the side a bit. But anyway, this you might wonder why the Auto Dealers Association are talking about electric motorcycles. I'll just explain that. I represent the franchised motorcycle dealers, RV dealers, heavy truck dealers, and car dealers. And when this came to mind was, again, I'll use Harley-Davidson. They're building a new bike called Project Livewire, and it's totally electric. They had it on display at the rally this year. I actually sat on it. They had it in a front wheel lock and the wheel back wheel on rollers. It sounds like a jet. Doesn't sound like a Harley. Not for me. I need the noise because loud pipes save lives. Anyway, having said all of that, Senator Haverly explained that, you know, we license today our motorcycles based on cubic centimeters. And that's a simple mathematical formula that then changes that in the case of the American-made motorcycles, which are Indian and Harley-Davidson, so that it gives good conversion. I've talked to physicists and mathematicians, and there's no way to convert CCs to or horsepower to CCs or torque to CCs. So we felt this is just a way to make sure when Project Livewire bikes arrive in South Dakota, and they're planned to by this summer, that we haven't spent 20 or 15 or 18,000, whatever they're going to cost, and not be able to license them. That would be bad. And there are three manufacturers, I'm told by the members, that are making electric powered motorcycles today. So these units will be arriving in South Dakota. And again, we've used the number of 1 million riders coming to South Dakota this summer. My guess is some of those will be on electric motorcycles. Now, the issue here is, and you may come to mind, and I'm going to anticipate a question before it comes up. Why did you put them at the top tier? Because if you read the bill, the language says the license fee for any motorcycle propelled by an electric motor that draws power from a battery is capable of being recharged is the highest fee authorized by this section. We had a discussion during the summer, interim summer study on highway funding and why should we do this? And my conclusion was we should put them at the top tier because they're not paying any fuel tax. That's the method to our madness. It's not a lot of money. It's a matter of $22 versus $18. And the language is written in a way that it fits all of the, whether it's Senate Bill 1 or whether it's House Bill whatever that we've got and all the bills this summer for, or this session we're considering for highway funding, this language will fit that. So when the Code Council puts these together, it's fine. But that was the method to our madness. We strictly want to fix something that we anticipate is going to be a problem by midsummer, and it's pretty much straightforward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rao. Further proponents of Senate Bill 94. Further proponents of Senate Bill 94. Last call for proponents of Senate Bill 94. Opponents of Senate Bill 94. Any opponents of Senate Bill 94? Last call for opponents of Senate Bill 94. Seeing none, we'll open up by questions from the committee. Senator Solano.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Mr. Rao. Mr. Chair, as it stands today, so if there is an electric motorcycle, are they able to use the streets and highways now? They just go unlicensed? And if that's the case, how does that work? I would anticipate they're getting pulled over then all the time because they are unlicensed. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Please.
I'm not aware if there's one here now. The ones that are here now are of the moped type, and they're not required to be licensed. But like I say, the one that Harley-Davidson's building, and then again, according to the membership, that two other manufacturers are building, are going to be high enough in speed, in torque, whatever you want to call it, watts, that they'll drive at highway speeds. They'll be up and down the interstate. Again, limited by the battery power, just like electric cars. So again, Project Livewire, they're talking about 150 to 200 miles. So I couldn't even make the rally without stopping and, or else have a long cord. So it's not for me, but but it will be for some people. And again, it's a lot lighter. It's the design of it is more like the, and I know I'm deviating a bit here, like a crotch rocket, if you want to call it. You lean forward. It would not be for me, but it's a neat looking unit. And like I say, I anticipate as a commuter bike, Sioux Falls, or especially when you get to Minneapolis or Los Angeles, they're going to be very, very popular.
Further questions by the committee? Seeing none, we'll close to questions and open it up for discussion and or action by the committee. Any discussion or action? Senator Kamak.
I move do pass.
Then moved by Senator Kamak, do pass. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Peterson. Comments on that motion, Senator Kamak.
I believe that it's a trend that's going to be coming our way, and we might as well be ready for it. There is no reason not to go forward with this.
Any other comments? Seeing none, I see none. I'm glad to hear that it has a sound. I was thinking maybe I had to get my deck of playing cards, and like I did with my first bicycle, put them on with the clothespin, snap them on, and get a little motorcycle sound here. All right. With that, seeing no further questions or no further discussion, the secretary will call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no on Senate Bill 94.
Senators Kamak?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Auten?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Solano?
Aye.
Monroe? Excused. Valley?
Aye.
Six ayes.
Senate Bill 94 has received a majority vote of the committee and is due pass. Senator Solano.
Move consent.
Been moved by consent by Senator Solano. All those in favor putting on the consent calendar say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Nay.
It will. You guys got to raise a fee. You're correct. It cannot go on the consent. Don't make any difference. We had to know it's not going to make it. So, and it couldn't go on the consent calendar. We'd have to redo that because it does set up a fee. Okay. With that, any further business by the committee? Seeing none, the chair would entertain a motion for adjournment. Been moved by Senator Auten, I think I heard, and seconded by Senator Solano. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Thank you.
Motion passes.